Welcome to the debate. Imagine for a second, finding a dusty 40-year-old photograph of yourself and your spouse.
Oh, wow. That is a heavy thought right off the bat.
Right? And it was taken right as you were starting your lives together, right as your country was plunging into this era of really intense, volatile political turmoil.
A completely different world, essentially.
Exactly. Now imagine trying to recreate that exact fleeting memory decades later. But not by picking up physical paint and a canvas, but by translating it onto a digital screen. It's no longer just a literal recording of light hitting film, you know?
No, not at all.
We're suddenly looking at memory actively wrestling with itself, translated through modern technology.
Exactly.
And that translation process is, well, it's fraught. You are dealing with an artifact, trying to do two incredibly difficult things at the exact same time.
Right. It wants to be a raw testament to who these two people were in that specific historical moment. And it wants to be an assertion of who they have become since. So the temporal distance and the medium chosen to cross that distance fundamentally alters the image we actually receive.
And that inherent tension is exactly what brings us to the table today. We are examining Jairo Duque's artwork, Ruby and Jairo, which is a prominent piece from his broader collection titled Trasteo.
A fascinating collection.
It really is. So the piece is a digital painting based on a photograph from nearly 40 years ago depicting the artist and his wife as newlyweds in a popular neighborhood in Cali, Colombia. And the source material frames this not just as a picture of a couple, but as a really profound reflection on memory, youth, and political militancy.
The ambition there is just massive.
I mean, it really is. So the central question we are exploring today is how we evaluate the success of this piece. Does the artwork's profound conceptual framework and political testimony succeed because of its emotional and narrative coherence? Or on the flip side, do the artist's self-acknowledged technical limitations within the digital medium actually undermine its ability to carry those heavy socio-political themes?
Exactly. And I will argue that the artwork fundamentally succeeds. It operates as this really powerful historical and ethical testimony where its narrative coherence and the sheer emotional intimacy of the subjects transcend any technical critiques about the medium itself.
And I take the opposing view here. While the conceptual foundation here is undeniably rich and, frankly, just a beautiful life project, the piece struggles under the weight of its own immense ambitions.
You think it collapses under that weight?
I do, yeah. We have the artist's own wonderfully transparent, self-critical reflections in the source text to look at. He acknowledges specific technical limitations, namely the flatness inherent in his execution of this digital piece. So I will argue that this visual flatness significantly limits the artwork's capacity to communicate those heavier themes of exile, war, and political resistance purely on its own.
Okay, well, let me offer an analogy right out of the gate to frame how I'm looking at this. Think of this digital painting as a time capsule.
Okay, a time capsule.
Yeah, and the modern digital medium acts as the glass of that capsule, allowing us to look back at a deeply analog, politically volatile past. Now, the glass might have its own reflections, its own digital artifacts or, you know, technical quirks, but it is exactly what allows the preservation and the viewing of the contents today.
The glass metaphor is interesting for sure, but I think sometimes the glass can distort what we're actually looking at.
Let me explain why I think it clarifies rather than distorts, though. Ruby and Jairo is, to me, a complete triumph of conceptual and emotional resonance. Duque explicitly defines this work not just as a painting, but as an exercise in conscious memory and a shared self-portrait.
Right, that's his stated goal.
Yes, and to achieve this, he relies on a very clear figurative base and constructs a highly specific psychological reality. Notice the color treatment. It deliberately privileges a really soft, contained palette of earth tones, grays, and greens.
It's very muted. Almost subdued.
It is, yes. And that isn't merely an aesthetic choice. It wraps the entire scene in an intimate, almost nostalgic atmosphere. This contained palette forces our attention away from the edges of the frame and directly onto the faces, the gestures, and the physical proximity of the couple.
It focuses the eye, sure.
Right. It establishes a remarkably solid emotional core. When you look at this, you aren't just seeing a portrait of newlyweds. You are seeing an alliance, and in the context of 1980s Colombia, an image of a fiercely united couple totally transcends the personal.
How so?
It becomes a symbol of fidelity to ethical principles, human dignity, and democratic participation in a time when those things were actively under threat.
I mean, I have immense respect for the deep historical and personal context Duque is working within. Truly, it's a remarkable history. But we have to evaluate the piece as a visual artwork.
Of course.
And in the visual realm, there is a stark tension between what the piece wants to be, this massive political declaration, and its actual technical execution.
You really think the execution fails the ambition?
I think it bottlenecks it, yeah. Let's look at the artist's own self-critique, which, by the way, is incredibly rare and refreshing to read. By his own admission, the artwork falls short in what artists call the hierarchy of planes.
The hierarchy of planes, right.
Right. So for those listening who might not be painters, think of the hierarchy of planes like a theater stage.
Okay, I'm with you.
On a well-designed stage, you have the actors in the front, the props in the middle ground, and the painted backdrop in the rear. In traditional painting, artists use subtle shifts in color, contrast, and focus to make that backdrop visually recede into the distance.
It creates depth.
Exactly. It tells your eye what is close and what is far. But here, Duque admits the piece lacks the ability to clearly separate the figures from the background.
He does note that the background and figures feel a bit compressed, yes.
Right. And because this is a piece of digital art trying to emulate traditional physical painting methods, it struggles with generating rich tonal transitions in the skin and the clothing to reinforce physical volume.
It's flatter.
It lacks the atmospheric depth in the shadows that would give the space true three-dimensionality. So the backdrop feels like it's pressed right up against the actors' backs. What we are left with is a distinct visual flatness.
Okay, but...
My argument is that this specific technical limitation makes it incredibly difficult for the visual piece alone to carry that heavy thematic burden. To look at this single, flattened digital image and say it serves as a declaration against war, inequality, exploitation, and corruption, well, that is a massive conceptual leap if you don't have a page of text explicitly doing the heavy lifting.
I hear that. I do. But I really have to push back on the framework you're using. Are you perhaps judging a deeply personal, memory-driven digital artwork through the rigid, traditional standards of classical academic painting?
I don't think it's rigid to look at spatial dynamics.
But you're asking for perfect atmospheric perspective. Couldn't the flatness that you and the artist both identify actually serve a narrative purpose? Like, couldn't it emphasize the inescapable closeness of the couple against that turbulent political background?
That is a clever defense, I'll admit. But let's see how that flatness practically affects the narrative intent, specifically when we look at the domestic space. Dukic explicitly notes in the text that the domestic environment, the plants, the furniture, all the interior details you see behind them, acts as a symbolic frame for their life in a popular neighborhood in Cali.
Right. The setting is crucial. It's their anchor.
But is it visually functioning as an anchor? The environment is supposed to tell us where they were and what that context meant for their political formation in 1980s Colombia. However, because the background lacks spatial separation, because the theater backdrop is pressed right against the actors, it visually conflates with the foreground.
It blends together a bit.
Exactly. The popular neighborhood context is flattened into mere decorative elements right behind their heads. It doesn't read as a lived-in, three-dimensional world that shaped their gritty reality. It just reads as a flat green pattern. So it fails to vividly convey that specific sociopolitical weight.
See, I'm just not convinced by that line of reasoning, because you're assuming the background's job is to function as a documentary photograph of Kali. It clearly isn't trying to do that.
What is it doing then?
It is a psychological landscape. When you look at those muted greens and grays pressing in on them, that isn't a failure to render deep space. It's a deliberate, albeit intuitive, mechanism to emphasize the couple as a refuge against the outside world.
A refuge needs to feel like it exists within a larger, threatening space, though.
But think about the psychology of memory, especially in a politically volatile climate. The domestic space doesn't need academic atmospheric depth, because in their minds, the focus was entirely on the survival and the alliance of the couple.
Sure.
By compressing the space, the digital medium essentially pushes the figures forward, thrusting them toward the viewer. It makes their physical and emotional proximity absolutely inescapable.
But does that make it a political statement?
I mean, really?
Absolutely. I mean, the closeness of the figures is the political statement.
Just by being close?
Yes. It says that in a society fracturing from violence and inequality, unity and love act as a radical form of resistance. And if you're listening right now and wondering why a flat background matters, think about it this way. If Duque had rendered the background with perfect classical perspective, with deep shadows stretching into a hyper-realistic living room, it would totally distract from the solid emotional core he was prioritizing.
It would change the focus.
Exactly. The world falls away. The alliance remains.
I understand interpreting the visual compression as psychological closeness. It's a poetic way to view it, for sure, but I just don't buy that it entirely absolves the execution of the medium. We really need to dig into the mechanics of this.
Let's do it.
The piece is explicitly defined as digital art. Arte digital. Yet visually, it relies entirely on attempting traditional physical concepts like drawing structure, tonal transitions, simulated brushstrokes, and volume. This creates a massive conceptual friction for me.
Friction how? Why is that a problem?
Well, think about the era we are discussing. We are talking about the gritty, tactile, often dangerous reality of 1980s social movements in Colombia. We are also talking about the very tactile reality of Ruby's own artistic practices.
Right. The source text mentions her work.
Yes. It makes a point to highlight that during this time, Ruby was a creator in her own right. She worked with ceramics, with traditional painting, and she works with physical jewelry today. There is a deeply physical, material reality to their lived experience.
She works with the earth, with physical elements, definitely.
Exactly. Now, contrast that tactile history with how digital art actually works mechanically. When a painter uses traditional oil paint, they use a technique called glazing.
Right, layering.
Yeah, they stack translucent layers of physical pigment on the canvas. Light literally travels through those physical layers, hits the canvas, and bounces back to your eye. That physical architecture of paint creates actual depth. It traps light. Digital art, unless meticulously, painstakingly rendered by an absolute master of digital lighting, is just a flat grid of pixels emitting uniform, artificial light into your eyes.
But he isn't trying to trick you into thinking it's a physical oil painting.
But the visual language he's using is the language of oil painting. And because it struggles to simulate those physical nuances of light and shadow, it feels inherently at odds with capturing the authentic material grit of their history.
I disagree completely.
The digital brushstroke tries to mimic the traditional canvas, but in falling short of true volume, it constantly reminds us of its artificiality. It feels sterilized compared to the history it's trying to depict.
Let me stop you right there, because you're weaponizing the word artificiality. I would argue that modern digital intervention, the very pixels and screens you're calling sterile, is exactly what makes this a contemporary act of memory. How so?
Memory isn't sterile.
No, but memory is an active reconstruction from the present. The drawing itself, the foundation of the piece, successfully sustains the structure of the bodies and the affective closeness. Duque notes this himself.
I agree the structure is there.
The foundational architecture of the human connection holds up perfectly. You are hyper-focusing on the mechanics of the medium as a limitation, but the medium is secondary to the narrative intent.
I wouldn't say the medium is ever secondary in visual art, though. The medium is how we receive the intent.
But the fact that he is using an iPad or digital tools to translate a 40-year-old analog photograph is the very mechanism that makes this an exercise in conscious memory. It's like finding a nostalgic Polaroid and putting a modern filter on it. It immediately shifts the context.
It distances it.
It tells the viewer, I am looking at the past through the lens of today. If he had just painted it traditionally with oils, mimicking the exact techniques of the 80s, it might just be a static replica of the past, like a museum diorama.
So you're saying the digital flatness is a feature, not a bug?
I'm saying it bridges the gap between who they were then and who he is now. Still exploring new artistic paths. It's not about perfectly simulating the physical grit of 1980s oil paint. It's about reconstructing a life trajectory from the vantage point of today. The digital format is the contemporary language used to honor an analog past. It's totally honest about what it is.
That is an incredibly charitable reading. you're taking a technical limitation that the artist himself pointed out as a flaw and relabeling it as a profound commentary on the nature of memory.
It's all about context.
Well, let's follow your trajectory argument then. You talk about reconstructing a life trajectory, which naturally brings us to the artwork's inclusion in the broader Trasteo collection.
Right, we absolutely cannot look at this piece in a total vacuum. The word Trasteo implies transit, moving, carrying things from one phase of life to another.
And placing Ruby and Jairo within that specific collection does attempt to elevate it. It surrounds the piece with other memories.
It elevates it massively, I think. It transforms this piece from a singular personal portrait into a symbol of a massive life journey. By situating it in Trasteo, the image suddenly encompasses their youth, their voluntary exile, the building of a family, and art functioning as a form of conscience against time itself.
That's a huge scope.
It becomes a testament to their enduring fidelity to those ethical principles we mentioned earlier, the defense of nature, democracy, and beauty.
And I deeply respect that ethical stance. It is a beautiful, admirable life project. No one is debating the integrity of their history, but my core question remains for the listener. Can you organically extract all of that from the image itself?
You don't think the image conveys that journey?
I think it conveys affection. But let's be honest about the viewing experience. The artist provides a stunning, deeply profound text to accompany this image. The writing speaks of militancy, of resistance against corruption, of human dignity. It is beautiful.
It is.
But if you walk into a gallery and you look solely at this digitally flattened canvas, without reading the plaque on the wall, what do you actually see?
You see two people, deeply intertwined.
Yes, you see a couple. You see nostalgia and earth tones. But do you see a stance against war? Do you see a protest against inequality and exploitation?
I think you feel the weight of it, yes.
I argue that the artist's profound writing is doing all the heavy lifting. The digital brushstrokes, hampered by their technical limitations in volume and depth, just cannot achieve that massive political communication on their own. If an artwork needs a page of text to explain that it's protesting corruption, the visual art hasn't fully succeeded at its primary job.
See, I think separating the visual image from the conceptual intent creates a false dichotomy, especially in contemporary art. The text isn't a crutch, you know? It's part of the holistic artistic artifact. But even if we just look at the image, the visual data provides the effective hook.
The effective hook? What do you mean?
The emotional doorway in. The soft greens and grays, the specific way their figures intertwine, the resolute gaze they hold, it creates a really palpable sense of complicity and lived time. Once the viewer feels that authentic complicity, the conceptual framework doesn't have to do the heavy lifting for the image. It blossoms out of the image.
That's very poetic.
The painting is, as Duquet says, a fragment of our personal history converted into an image. It is an affirmation that art can be testimony.
But testimony usually requires specific details to be effective.
The visual closeness validates the political coherence. Think about it. You cannot have a massive, abstract political declaration about democracy and resistance without first believing in the intimate reality of the human beings making that declaration.
Okay, fair point.
The image successfully secures that intimate human reality. The politics follow naturally from the defense of that intimacy.
I will certainly concede that the visual complicity is present. The gesture of the couple does feel authentic, and structurally, the drawing of their connection is incredibly sound.
Right.
But if we are evaluating the artwork's total success, we have to acknowledge the mechanics of how we synthesize massive societal themes like exile or exploitation into a single domestic frame. Execution matters immensely.
Execution matters, sure, but it isn't the only metric of success.
But when the artist himself steps back, looks at his piece, and says, I could have enriched the tonal transitions to reinforce the volume. I could have explored more nuances in the shadows for atmospheric depth. He is recognizing a gap.
He's being self-critical, yeah.
There's a gap between his brilliant conceptual vision and his technical execution on the tablet. The visual language relies on traditional portraiture cues, yet it lacks the physical complexity that traditional portraiture uses to convey environmental depth. It is a fascinating historical document, absolutely. But as a standalone political artwork, its ceiling is lowered by its digital flatness.
I hear your point, and I respect your focus on the technical mechanics of the piece. But I actually view Duque's self-critique as evidence of the piece's ultimate success as an honest exercise in memory.
Honest because it's flawed?
Exactly. Real memory is inherently flawed. It is incomplete, it is sometimes flat, and it certainly lacks perfect tonal transitions. By leaving the piece in this state and openly, vulnerably acknowledging its technical bounds, Duque gives us a truly honest self-portrait. Let's bring our positions together to see where we stand as we wrap up.
Let's do it. I maintain that Ruby and Haido is a profound success as a piece of historical and personal testimony. The emotional proximity of the figures, the ethical coherence of their life project, and the deliberate narrative intent far outweigh the self-assessed technical imperfections of the digital medium. It is a piece where love and survival become a tangible, visual political statement. And to summarize my perspective, I maintain that while the conceptual foundation and the political history of this couple are undeniably powerful and worthy of immense respect, the digital artwork's technical limitations constrain its impact.
Right.
The lack of volume and atmospheric depth inherent in this specific digital execution makes it difficult for the visual piece to organically communicate its most ambitious political themes, like resistance against corruption, without relying heavily on the artist's supplementary text.
However, despite our disagreement on the mechanics of the medium, I think we both clearly acknowledge and agree upon the incredible bravery it takes for an artist to do this. The artistic vulnerability required for Haido Duque to offer such a transparent, self-critical look at his own technical process, while simultaneously laying bare his most intimate personal history, is just staggering.
Oh, absolutely. We certainly agree on that. It is so rare to see an artist be their own harshest critic in public. Regardless of our debates over digital pixels versus traditional oil volume, the artwork undeniably serves as a vital historical document.
It really does.
It captures a specific, charged moment of Colombian history, the energy of 1980 social movements, and perhaps most importantly, the enduring partnership and shared creative spirit between Ruby and Haido.
It's a piece that really forces us to reflect on how we consume art. It asks us to balance conceptual ambitions with material execution, and I think it leaves the listener with a lingering question to ponder long after they close their eyes and stop looking at the canvas.
What's that?
Is art's ultimate duty to achieve flawless visual and technical perfection? Or is its highest calling to serve as a resilient, perhaps imperfect, testimony of lived time and human dignity? There is clearly much more to explore in Jairo Dukas's Tristeo collection. Thank you for listening.